It's time.
Today's program is brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Visit michters.com to find out how their taste is everything, cost be damned attitude is creating some of the finest whiskeys available.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from Bushwick, Brooklyn!
How you doing? Oh, I'm on the super reverb. The lady who's eating lunch outside is like, what the heck? What?
Check,
what?
Please.
What? Check. Can I move? Can I move? She actually just got her check. It's fine.
Okay.
Well, welcome to the show. Call in all your questions. 2-718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. Here for the next 45 minutes or so, right, Jack?
Yeah.
Which, speaking of, we have Jack Inslee, our intrepid engineer over there in the booth.
Yes.
One of the listeners referred to him as J-Mall, which is his new Star Wars name.
J-Mall.
You need to have like one of those double-sided, like, you need to get you some like face paint. You could be like Kiss almost, although it's not like, do you like that kind of music? Do you listen to like Kiss?
Kiss, no.
You don't like to rock and roll all night?
I like rock.
Do you like to party every day?
No.
No?
Not every day, no.
That's why. That's why. You couldn't hang with him because
they
party every single day, not just some days.
I couldn't get into the I could never take them seriously with the makeup and the theatrics and all that.
Yeah? I hear that they're, with the exception of Gene Simmons, I hear that they're nice fellas.
Yeah, Gene Simmons is a horrible dude.
Yeah, that's what I hear. So I hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got Stas, the Hammer Lopez. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah?
Yes.
Anything special happening?
You're giving a talk at Yale on Thursday.
I am. That's true.
Is it open to the public?
I don't know. We can look it up. I'm supposed to have figured out what I'm going to serve people, and I haven't figured it out yet. But if you're in the...
Well, we don't know.
If you're in... Well, I know where it is. The event that I'm going to is at a place in New Haven called...
Oh, Bar. Right.
It's called Bar.
That's probably
open. Bar has been there for over 25 years. And the reason I know this is because that's where I wooed my wife, Jen. That's where, they used to have something called Alternative. Did I already talk about this on the show? They used to have something called Alternative Wednesdays, right? So Alternative Wednesdays was when they, because back then it was like pre, when people like listened to stuff. So it was like industrial rave stuff. You familiar with the band LA Style?
Mm-mm.
Jack, you familiar with the old kind of industrial housey?
He's on the phone.
It's their big song was James Brown is Dead. Of course, he was not dead at that time, but yet that was a song we listened to. So that's how I was able to land my wife, which is nice. So anyway, I'll be there again on Thursday. And we also have in the studios a new special guest, our new Booker and Dax Searsall customer service representative.
Social media, too. Big social media.
So unlike Nastasia and myself, anti-social media, which, by the way, like, I know I have a million, like, Twitter things. My head has been so buried because I'm working on this MoFad exhibit that's opening up in a couple of weeks and on my next Booker and Dax project that I've been buried. I get, like, once a week I look at my Twitter. So if I haven't answered you, I will answer you soon. But I'd like to introduce Rebecca. Give us your whole life in 20 seconds or less.
My whole life?
20 seconds or less. Whole life. Into the mic,
oh,
please.
Oh, man.
What do you got?
Hello, everybody. My whole life.
Yeah.
I'm 22. Mm. I like the color orange and ice cream.
Wow. Orange is nice.
That was under 20 seconds. She did it.
Yeah. I gave her less than 1 second for every year of her life. I'm glad that you like ice cream. Where are you from?
Outside of Philly.
Outside of Philly. Oh, okay. So do you like... okay. So and you're 22. So but by the time that you probably remember most things, Breyers had already changed their recipe to include all sorts of stabilizers. Do you remember back when Breyers did not have stabilizers?
I don't... Breyers is not my favorite, so I don't know.
Well, but you're from Philly.
Technically not from Philly.
No?
Originally Long Island, but I've also lived other states.
So do you believe that it's... do you believe it's Strong Island or the Wrong Island? So I can figure out where you're from. Because either you hate Long Island, in which case it's the Wrong Island, or you love Long Island, in which case it's Strong Island.
I'm going to go in the middle.
You're going to go in the middle?
Yeah, I was too little to...
Too little to...
I'm going with Wrong.
Yeah. Stas likes it. Stas believes in the Strong Island. You like that? You like going over there to the beach and all that stuff.
Uh-uh.
What?
I don't.
Really?
Yeah. I don't.
Man.
I have to sometimes.
Oh, I'm a poor Stas. Has to go to the beach.
No. It's never for fun. It has not been for fun once.
Wow. Hey, yeah. Two things. So I have a caller that I want to get to, but before we do that, I have to send a big, big, big shout out to John Nihol. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And, of course, our old friend Joel Esposito. Both listened to the drop and made donations and specified that it came from Cooking Issues.
I like that.
So they are the coolest people of the day.
Thank you. Please specify so that Jack knows, you know, kind of what's going on. Also, after we spoke to the caller, Michter's, huh? We got Michter's on board?
We got Michter's, yeah. They've been around. This is their first Cooking Issues episode.
Oh, all right. So, you know, I like their product, but they apparently don't like ours well enough. All right, whatever.
Well, now they do. All right. Here they are.
All right.
We get Molecular whatever as our sponsor. But.
Okay, listen. Hey, enough of that stuff. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave. How's it going?
Doing all right.
This is Chris from the Green Zone in D.C.
How you doing? How's everything going? How is that recipe with the mint working out? Is everything all right?
It's not summer anymore, and the entire summer run, I just blended it to water because I couldn't find a solution.
Man. Yeah, mint's tough. Mint oxidizes so quickly.
Since most of what I do involves infusions, and of course I'm doing ISTE infusions, one of the things I'm trying to infuse is some sticky resins like mastic tears or frankincense tears. And when I tried one of them in the ISTE, it gunks up the entire ISTE. Like, you know, I did two, it was a half liter, two nitrous cartridges, and the entire inside of the ISTE was like coated in this sticky residue, and then it messed up my strainer, it messed up a bar spoon, and just everything was coated in this like really impermeable stuff. And then I tried doing another one, just a standard infusion in a jar, and that was a bit better, but again, like everything it touches just gets this coating on it. So I was wondering if you had, first of all, if you knew what solvent for that would be, because I've tried everything from pure alcohol to vinegar, nothing worked. And also a good way to infuse it that doesn't just gunk up all my equipment.
You know, this is crazy. I have another question in from George, who we met on Mastika. Like, it must be like in the mental air. And that stuff, is some sticky, some super sticky. Once you start using it, I mean, I used to make oil, and even just a couple of tears would stick to the bottom of the pan forever, and took a long time to fully dissolve into the oil. And there's always like some sort of residue left. It's just a nightmare. And I was thinking about it for George's problem too. He was trying to make he wants to make the water, the Mastika water, which I don't know if anyone's been back to Greece recently. They now have this like basically seltzer water with Mastika flavor in it, which actually I think is I like it a lot. I think it's really refreshing. Nastasia, you didn't like it so much. I pounded it like, but I love that resin flavor anyway. Mastika.
Yeah, the flavor's great.
Yeah, I love it anyway. And so, you know, his problem was how to dissolve it, but not in an EC, because you can't get to an EC and neither can you throw it away. Like, my solution for him was going to be, like, let's throw it away, you know, like like put it – he wanted to do a distillation, right? So what I was going to tell him, and maybe I'll read his question later if I have time, but what I was going to tell him to do was he was looking to either do an infusion into alcohol and then or oil and then try to suspend it, right? In which case, it's going to go cloudy. It's not going to be like the – ooh, we lost him. But I'll keep talking. It's going to be cloudy. It's not going to be you know, clear. So for that application, if you were going to use an extract, it's going to go cloudy.
Can you go back a bit, because I just got cut off.
Oh, yeah. Sure. So I'll say for George, he had a slightly different problem. He was looking to make a he wants to make the water, right? And so he had a couple of different things. One, he was looking at distillation, not at infusion, and also just at using like Mastika extracts. Now, his problem with the Mastika extract is that it was clouding up, right?
Right.
I mean, sorry, not cloud, floating to the top and not staying in. So one thing you can do, obviously, without us to answer both of your questions at the same time, one thing you can do is just keep shaking it, and over time you'll get some transfer, and then skim the stuff off the top, but it's going to be fairly light, you know, flavor-wise.
Right.
Another thing
you
can do for that is you can stabilize that with gum arabic into a syrup. You can stabilize this stuff with gum arabic. Once you stabilize it with the gum arabic, you then should be able to make a soda with it. It will separate over time, but you'll be able to shake it back in, right? So that you'll be able to do. So you try that. Because that's how they do it. Now, unless you use an oil stabilizer that's weighted, you're not going to be able to get it to stay in 100% in a carbonated beverage without having it separate over time. But again, you can just shake it back in. So, and the reason you use gum arabic is that gum arabic has very low viscosity and dilutes well without having emulsions break. So it is used for soda syrups to stabilize things into soda syrups, but it's not going to help with stability over time because it's not going to change the weight of the particles, so you'll still get some separation. Anyway, then he was saying, George was saying, I want to distill the stuff, but then it sticks to everything in the pot. So I was going to say, to just do a test, do an old style, like real cheap distillation, get a pot, put a strainer in the pot, line that strainer with something you can throw away, like a linen cloth or like a napkin or you know, some sort of paper filter, something that's not going to be – something you don't mind losing. Stick the Mastika in that, the Kios Mastika in that, and then put the lid on top, put water in the bottom, boil it, just boil the crap out of it, and then just keep putting ice cubes on the top of the lid so that you form a reflux system where it keeps on refluxing. And I think it'll work, but I have to have someone try it to make sure that it would work. Now, on your thing with the EC, maybe we could do a similar kind of a situation. I don't think the melted crap will go through a tea satchel. So if you were to buy and maybe double bag some tea satchels, not the – you know the tea satchel styles that are like plasticky with kind of big holes? I wouldn't use that. I'd use kind of the more papery ones with the small holes. Stick the stuff in and do the ISI. You should be able to extract it. And the melted goop, I don't think, is going to make it through the tea bags. But I could be wrong. So, I could be wrong. So I would test it and see whether or not that works out for you. And by the way, George, that same technique using an ISI might be good for flavor as well. So I knocked out two Masticas with one stone.
It's good.
So, Rebecca, what are your favorite kind of ice creams? We were talking about Breyers. Breyers, obviously, Philadelphia style, famously no eggs, right? Mm-hmm. So do you like a Philadelphia style ice cream? You don't even consider yourself Philadelphia. I shouldn't even talk to you about Philadelphia ice cream. So what kind of ice cream do you like? Are you one of these hyper-dense, like super rich, like French style, like gelato style?
Well, I love anything chocolate. No, I like hard ice cream.
Like hard ice cream?
The other day I tried, what was it called? Famous ice cream in Brooklyn. It's like something Hills.
Hills?
I don't know.
But now you have, when you say Hills, I say Hills Alive in the Sound of Music. Did you go to Oddfellows?
No.
You should go to Oddfellows.
I will try now.
Sam Mason's, right.
There was a beautiful salted caramel with salted caramel in it.
I would hope that the salted caramel contained salted caramel.
Well, no, sometimes it's just the flavor, you know?
Yeah.
This was a good one.
All right.
So I've got a caller, but I have a pretty hilarious comment I've got to share before that.
Alrighty.
Got a comment here in the chat room.
Right.
Man, cooking issues is just a sideshow compared to this chat.
Wow.
Dave might be out of work soon.
Wow. Well, I like being a sideshow. I've been called a sideshow like my whole life. Right, Stas?
Yeah.
So usually, though, I'm not a sideshow. Like, I'm a sideshow freak. Is more like what people call me, a sideshow freak. Huh. So they're having a lively chatter. By the way,
it's a very lively chat here. We're talking about croissants, all kinds of
stuff. Stas doesn't like croissants. That's why I never can talk about them. I think they're delicious.
They're so good.
What are they saying about the croissant?
Well, they ask, they're asking like, hey, what's everybody eating? So I said, I'm having a croissant. Yeah. And they started talking about croissants.
You know what's an absurd word? Croissant-wich. Makes no sense.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous word.
And what about those donuts that are also...
Cronuts? I happen to know the fellow that makes the cronuts. What are your feelings on them?
I would rather have one or the other.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mm.
Wow. Hater on the cronut.
It's called Ample Hills, the ice cream.
Ample Hills?
Oh, yeah. That stuff's good.
It's amazing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, well, go check out my man Sam Mason's Oddfellas, too. If you're an ice cream fan and you're in the greater Brooklyn area...
I have to try it.
You must. You're obliged. Okay. Wait, we have a caller, you said?
We do have a caller.
All right, caller, you're on the air.
Hi to Nastasha, Dave, Jack, and Rebecca. I might have something for you, Dave. We have a medium-sized liquid amber in the yard, and if I'm able to procure some sweet grum without murdering the tree, I'd be happy to send you the good. Any ideas on how and when I might harvest the resin?
All right, so we're talking about sweet gum trees, liquid amber, how do you pronounce that? Styracophylla? What is it? I don't remember.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so sweet gum trees... Which, by the way, I found out you can grow in my place in Connecticut, but they just don't grow there naturally. They have a right? That's what we're talking about here, sweet gums. And they have a resin in them that is supposedly sweet that can be harvested and was harvested by Native Americans. I have no idea how to do it. I don't think it runs as freely as, like, a syrup. I don't think it saps out that same way. I think you have to do it like you would for, like, other resin-style things where you make a vertical. Remember, if you're ever going to wound a tree like that to get the resin, you want to go vertical because you don't want to in any way girdle the tree. You know what I mean?
And would you go off of a side branch?
Oh.
Or do you need to go off the main trunk?
Oh. Well, I never thought of it. Most people who are going to, like, you know, take things off of trees end up going off of the trunk. I had never thought of doing a branch. I don't know how they do – I don't know how they harvest you know, gum acacia from acacia trees. I should go take a look at some pictures and see how they do it. Acacia trees, I think, are relatively small, you know, in relation to a sweet gum, which is I consider that for this neighborhood like a mid-sized tree. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, huh, I don't know. But I mean, I'm going to look at some pictures and maybe talk about it the next time up. I encourage you to look at some pictures too. But I think it's going to be a wound and wait. Kind of a situation, and I don't know what the difference in flavor would be between, let's say, because I haven't researched in a long time, between, let's say, like an early spring, like first resin versus a later, but I'm pretty sure the last time I read there was a definite time that is best to do it, but I'm going to look into it, and we'll you know, because I want to try this stuff. Let me just put it this way, I want to try this stuff.
Right. Is there anything else I need to do to confirm that it's the right species? It has the five-pointed leaves, drops the monkey balls.
That's it. You're good.
Right.
Then, there's
and,
no, there-
and I'm on the West Coast. I'm in Southern California. So, you know, this wouldn't be a native tree here.
Right,
any,
yeah. Right.
Any problem there?
No. I mean it's probably, you know, I think the sweet gum is, like, from, like, my area here in New York on south. So it doesn't, like, it doesn't like it to be, like, hyper cold. You know what I mean? So it's not
right.
Like an extreme northern tree. So I think it should do fine, you know, out, you know, where you are. I don't know how it is with drought tolerance or anything like that. But, you know, if the tree looks good, it's gonna be good. And there's no other species I know of that looks like a sweet gum other than the sweet gum. In fact, this kid. I was so upset. This kid, like, was at a county fair. Did I mention this on the show? County fair up in Connecticut. And he won some sort of freaking prize for his collection. Now, he is a kid. So, like, Nastasia would cut him some slack, not me. And he puts a sweet gum ball in his collection of plant seeds and writes sycamore. Mm. Oh, what the hell? They don't, you know, they, I mean, they're spherical, right? So, like, you know, a sweet gum ball looks like a sycamore ball. In the way that a basketball is very similar to a koosh. You know what I mean? It's like they're not.
Did you correct him?
Well, he wasn't there. I was just like, you know, if I was the judge, I would have been like, meh, goodbye, kid. You know, learn some precision. And then I would have written a note. I would have said, not sycamore. Sweet gum.
Smiley face.
You know, or, you know, look, it's probably not the kid. The kid, I'm sure what happened. Okay, I feel bad. I'm sure the kid went to one of his parents and was like, hey, Ma, hey, Dad, what is this? And they were like, that's a sycamore. And so, like, he was just like, you know, he
totally
believed them.
Yeah.
So maybe he should just go smack his parents in the face. But I'm not advocating smacking your parents in the face. I'm just saying know your sweet gums. But let me know. I'm going to look into it, and maybe if I can remember, I'll talk about what I've learned, and then call back and tell us if you were able to harvest anything.
Yeah, I'll let you know what I find. Can I hit you with a couple of just brief questions for myself? I have a quinine sulfate source from Chem Savers.
Okay.
But I'm wondering if you would serve this to your family.
Quinine sulfate? I serve it to my family constantly.
Well, but this from this source, it's 99% titration. It says for research and development, not for drug clinical use in humans, but it does say it meets USP specifications. I could give you, like, the certificate of analysis.
Yeah, I want, like, if they said it's USP. Okay, listen. Remember this. Remember, all the quinine you buy is actually from quinine bark. I mean, cinchona bark. Okay,
right.
It's not synthesized, so it's not like it's made out of some crazy, like, you know, like, conglomerate of poison, although it itself is poison. But, like, the – so You have that going for you. Now, the issue is whether or not it's been certified for food or for drug. By the way, drug – how can it say not certified for drugs, but it has a USP, so it's good for the pharmacopoeia?
Is there like just a more expensive process to go through FDA to get the actual –
I don't know.
Safe.
I mean, the real stuff's not that expensive. In other words, Schweppes isn't paying the prices that we're paying to get this stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Right. Schweppes. But the if it's USP, I'd feel pretty safe, especially considering the small amounts that you're using. The risk is that if they stored it in an area that's contaminated with stuff that is otherwise nasty. But what do they say that the other like half a percent of point is?
So we've got, it says purity by HPLC, 99 to 101%. And it says, yeah, water 4 to 5%, heavy metals 0.001%, insoluble matter 0.1%.
I mean, look.
It says that organic volatile impurities pass the test.
If it says USP, I would use it. I don't want to make your decision for you, but if it said USP, oh, no. I would use it.
Okay, well, I'll try it on myself, and I can be the one that suffers.
Right, but again, if it is a heavy metal thing, right, you won't know that I've shafted you for another couple of decades. But hey,
right.
By then, maybe they will have fixed that
stuff.
I'll
call back then.
Yeah.
Oh my God, and then along with, I'm going to be carbonating that. Do you see any problem with leaving a CO2 tank on? Any problem with the regulator? Or it's just under my sink, a 10-pound tank. And it's a pain to go in there and twist the thing off. Is there any potential?
No, I leave mine on 100% of the time. There are potentials for problems, right? If your hose bursts, it'll dump the entire 10-pound tank into your kitchen. But like, you know, what I would do is a lot of people who sell kind of homebrew stuff, they tend to sell this kind of very flexible hose that comes off of the tank. Okay?
Right.
And I hate it. I really freaking hate it. That, like, unreinforced hose is the worst. And I've seen that stuff burst. So I would invest in the real, like, it's like double wall. There's an inner tube, then there's like a fiberglass reinforcing, and then an outer. And the inner line is, I think, polyethylene, and it's this completely reinforced, like, beverage line. And I have never once, ever seen one rupture. I've seen one be abused so horribly that it did generate a pinhole leak, but I've never seen, and that was real abuse, but I've never seen one like rupture ever in service.
Right.
And if you get the real Oetker ear clamps that are really cheap that are meant for that size tubing that you're using and clamp it down, it would take a force of nature to cut that thing open. So I wouldn't worry about that, because that's what people do 100% of the time in bars. They hook the tank up to their carbonator, and then that's it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But don't do it with the crappy hose, though, all right?
Okay. For a friend, what would your thoughts, time, and temp be for cooking? Nastasia might want to plug her ears. Cooking a human placenta.
Oh, temp. Jesus.
I don't think Dave likes that either.
Oh, Jesus. I can't imagine what happened if I gave a recommendation on the air. Jack, what are your... Even Rebecca, who I don't know, this is literally the first time I met her, has a Anastasia-style face on. Jack, what are your thoughts on this?
I say go for it.
I have no idea.
Ask a doctor.
Ask a doctor.
No, listen, doctors famously don't know how to cook anything. Like, plenty of doctors know how to cook things, but it's not part of their purview. But doctors will always... No. A doctor will give you a food safety recommendation.
Right. I don't know.
They'll
save
that
for...
What? Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know that I want to go on record with a placenta recipe. I think it just might be one of those things that comes back and bites me in the behind. You know what I mean?
And thanks for your call.
I understand.
Yeah. All right. Let us know what happens with the liquid embar. Thanks so much. All right. Yeah,
man, let me tell you, though.
What?
One question.
One question. Even if Jack tells you, hey, just one question,
don't come
on the air.
Hey,
and
listen.
Himself.
But he's doing us a favor. He's going to get us a liquid embar. Here's one thing, though. On the chat room, why don't you guys go to town, those of you who don't mind, go to town on your placenta recommendations. Am I right, Jack?
Yeah, go crazy.
Relegate me to the sideshow. You know? I'll be the sideshow, and you can be the freak if you're putting, you know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. Okay, I'm going to rip through some questions because I don't want to miss them. We got a question in. I don't know who it's from. on lardo. I recently cured lardo that is now hanging in the walk-in. It was just now that I realized I accidentally used Instacure number 1 instead of Instacure number 2. What we're talking about, lardo is basically cured back fat. Delicious. Do you like lardo?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, finally, something. The recipe that this person is using calls for curing salt. So curing salt is salt plus either sodium nitrite or sodium nitrate. Now, if you're doing a long cured product like a ham, or in this case a lardo, if you're going to specify a curing salt, you would typically specify the one that has nitrate in it, right? So instead, because nitrate is longer lasting, longer acting, and it takes a long time for the curing salt to make it to the middle of a big cut like this. And if it doesn't make it to the middle before it's converted, then you don't have any curing power. Capiche?
Gotcha.
Okay. So he or she used the wrong one and is wondering whether they're going to kill everybody. The answer is I would feel 100% okay with this because, first of all, remember, a lot of people, when they're traditionally curing lardo, they're not using a curing salt anyway. They're just using regular salt. Secondly, it's a whole cut, so if it hasn't been punctured, there's nothing going on in the middle anyway, so it's not like a salami. Where you know, like the actual, you know, the word botulism comes from the word for sausage in Latin because, you know, you take stuff, you mix it up, it's contaminated in the middle, you exclude the air, and it's botulism time. You know what I mean? If you don't. So first of all, you're going to have a high salt level, which is going to inhibit the botulism. You're dealing with a whole muscle cut. And here's the kicker. Unlike muscle meat, there is not as much water in back fat by a long shot. So it doesn't take as much to get the water activity of back fat very low. And if the water activity of the back fat's very low, there's going to be no botulism growing. And so I think you're aided by – so although I looked up on the net on the way over here that like the super fresh back fat unchilled has a fairly high water activity like 991 or something like this. If you – and it just said dried – I think salted and dried or smoked or something like this without – no curing. Had a water activity down like 0.7 something. And so, in other words, ain't nothing growing in that son of a gun. So I would feel confident. I would say confident. What do you think, Stas?
Yeah.
Good
Peter,
answer.
Peter wanted you to mention to people to buy tickets.
Oh, why don't you mention it since you're
buy
fake
tickets
Peter.
To their new exhibit at tickets.mofad.org.
Wow, that was a sale, Stas.
I'm sold.
Wow, I'm going to go right on that damn website.
For the,
hey, I'm going to be there too.
Yeah.
Oh, Jack's
really?
Going to be there.
Jackie
yeah.
Molecules, J-Mol.
I'm doing sound.
Sound. Okay.
Sound guy. Hey, I got some, I have caller, right? And I also, I have to read some of this stuff that's coming into the chat room. You know, you opened up the rabbit hole here. Elliot says 3 hours at 76.3 degrees Celsius, then sears all.
Whoa!
And then someone else said you forgot to pre-sear the placenta.
Wow.
Someone else said soup dumpling placenta.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's happening. And there's a caller on the line.
Caller, you are on the air.
Hey, guys, how's it going? It's John from New Haven here.
How you doing?
Just got my MOFAD tickets yesterday. I actually can't wait for the exhibit, so really looking forward to that.
Nice.
See, that's a sale.
I had a question on black garlic.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
I've been interested in making some on my own, and I'm looking at the Series Seeds website, and they say to either do it in a dehydrator or an oven at 130 for like 2 to 3 weeks.
Yep.
And that's a really long time to tie up my oven. I don't have a dehydrator, but I do have a circulator, and I was wondering if I could do the garlic in a Ziploc bag for like 2 or 3 weeks in there.
That should work. I don't see why it won't. Another option if you're really interested is I know people have done slightly higher temperatures. They've used to keep warm in a rice cooker and just let it rock in the rice cooker. And it's actually faster because the temperature is somewhat elevated, but it's not high enough to cook it out or anything like this. And so I know a bunch of people who I think it was Johnny Hunter, I think, who was telling us about like the rice cooker stuff, and that you could do it at a higher temperature than what is recommended, and it still works and works faster. It has a slightly different flavor, obviously, but it works and works faster. So the rice cooker, basically anything that you can control, you know, dehydrators, you know, you can get like a you don't. Remember, if you're doing it in a dehydrator, you need to seal it so it stays moist, right? I mean,
right.
Yeah. You know, you could also just get an electric thing, a flexible electric heater, there may, and stick it to the outside of a jar with a thermocouple in between that and the jar and put it on one of these $30 PIDs. You could be out of the woods with a temperature-controlled curing chamber for probably under $70. You know, because you don't need hyper accuracy. You just need it to stay relatively the same temperature and be sealed. You know what I mean? And so you could do that without, like, see, once you have the circulator, you have the water running all the time. You have that noise in your kitchen for 2 weeks. You're running that thing, and yeah, blah 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 blah. Like, if you do this, it's like, you know, very. You can insulate it so that you're not, like, throwing off energy into the atmosphere, and you can make something kind of fairly efficient that way, probably for pretty cheap.
Okay. And then just real quick, to go back to the circulator again, I wouldn't be running any, like, foodborne illness risk or anything like that if it's sealed away for that long, or would the time and temp be enough to kill everything?
What temperature are you going to use?
I mean, ideally around the 130, 140.
Oh, yeah. If you're running it, like, what's 140? What's that in Celsius?
55. Oh, yeah. So then that should be fine.
Yeah, you're fine. Right? You can run it from now until we all keel over dead, and you'll be good. We won't keel over from the microbes. We'll keel over from being dead.
Great. All right, perfect. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right. Good luck.
Just take a break now.
That's how to ask a question and get out, though. See? The one question.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You're going to hit it and quit it. Anyway, okay, we'll take a quick break and come back with some more questions on the cooking issues.
Here's what Heritage Radio Network would sound like without donations. It's not as good as the show you were just listening to, is it? Give us a few bucks. Help keep us running. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Click the donate tab on the top right corner.
You don't like the silence? You think people actually prefer to listen to the show rather than just silence?
I don't mind silence, yeah. But I'm guessing they like you better.
Now you have sounds of silence going through my head. Yeah, well, Stas and I had this thing where we were cooking turkeys, and when I was boning the turkey, I was singing Guajolote, My Old Friend. And so now whenever I have sounds of silence going through my head, I have Guajolote, My Old Friend. You know what I mean? And I'm sitting there, I can go back to, like, boning this turkey out. You know what I mean?
Nice.
I've never had a real honest-to-God freaking guajolote. I need to, right? You know what I mean? These weak commercial pavos. Although, the ones that Heritage sells, right, they're pretty close to a wild turkey, but they're still raised, right? I mean, they're fairly close. So can I say
they're
that
they're pretty wild.
Oh. So if I've had the Heritage turkeys, would you say that, like, I've had the taste of true guajolote? I don't know.
I want to hear Steve Jenkins say it.
Yeah.
You gotta shoot him in the face to save him? Actually, you know, that's true with a turkey. That's why one of the things I want to go hunting for is turkey. My wife will not let me get a freaking... First of all, okay, look. My wife won't let me have, like, a gun in the house. I'm working on air rifles. I told this on the air, but you can't use air rifles to kill turkeys in Connecticut. But the good thing about shooting turkeys is it's headshot or nothing. So it's kill or miss. There's no wounding. Kill or miss.
What if you miss the head?
Well, you have to miss so bad. It's got this long neck.
I'm just saying.
So what I'm saying is you're shooting for the head. It's attached to a long neck. So it's not like, you know, if you're trying to get a heart shot and you hit it in the butt and it's running around. The odds are you either kill it dead or you miss it entirely. It seems to me that this is a good mode of hunting. Plus, they're hard. So it's like, you know, I don't know, right? I mean, if you're going to go hunting, it seems to me that, like, what you don't want to do is be an inexperienced hunter, go out there and just wing a bunch of birds, and then they're, like, flying around in pain for whatever because you missed. You know what I mean? Jack, you not with me on this?
Yeah, I got a caller.
All right, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, my name's David from the Seattle area, and I was wondering if you'd ever thought about or ever made a carbonated granita. I was thinking about doing it with, like, a block of dry ice or liquid nitrogen with just some soda or something like that.
Yeah, funny story. So Sam Mason, I think it was Sam Mason, was interested in carbonated granita years and years and years ago. This is like maybe like 2006 or 2005. I think it was Sam, came over to the FCI where I was working, and he was like, hey, can we carbonate, you know, sorbets and whatnot in the tailor. We had a tailor at the school because the Carpet Johnny was – I didn't have access to the Carpet Johnny, so I had the tailor. And he was like, hey, can we do it? I'm like, I don't know. Let's find out. So we tried to like plug all the holes in the tailor and like pressurize it with CO2 while it was running. And I blew the gaskets out and we sprayed sorbet mix over the entire freaking kitchen. Like sorbet mix everywhere. And the short answer is that you can carbonate anything, but then you can't. You can carbonate a granita as long as you never harden it, right? Because the carbonation can only live in the liquid phase. As soon as it's frozen solid, then, or even approaching solid, all of the CO2 will be squeezed out. So what you need to do is keep it at that kind of like slushy area where there's still enough liquid to have carbonation, and then carbonate it at a fairly high level, and realizing there's going to be a lot of nucleation sites and possibly foaming, because only the liquid will absorb CO2 and the ice will exclude it. So that's the short answer. And you know, dry ice, the problem with dry ice is you're not going to get an appreciable amount of carbonation in it unless you keep it under pressure. And if you keep it under pressure, then you might hose yourself, right? So I would, as a cheap way to start, I would, if you have a dipper cabinet, something that's not going to freeze all the way, then I would like put the mixture into bottles, like shake carbonate the hell out of it after it comes out, and then just leave it in that kind of a slushy state, and then uncap and like slam out of the bottle, or just cut the top of the bottle off. Because that's what I used to do when I would carbonate gels. I would set the gels in bottles and then just cut the bottle open and then take the gel out without rupturing it. Because I never was doing it enough to like invest in a system that let me reach in and get a large thing out. Does that make sense?
Yeah. This is just like going back to your old streams. I was wondering if you and Stasi ever found that pear that you tried in London.
No.
Okay.
I forget which one it was. I'd have to go back and look at my notes. I think it was the beurre super fin was delicious. Like it was like this like butter pear that was like, I think it was a super fine, right? I think that was one of the ones. And then there was a pear that had a really awesome there was a pear that tasted like quince that was ridiculous, so good. I have to go back and look at my notes. I was never able to find it. And like the problem is in the U.S., obviously, is I don't live in like hyper pear country. So I've been meaning to take a trip up to Corvallis for years, but no one's – I don't know. I've never made it up during pear season or during berry season, by the way. Although it turns out like in Connecticut, this little area in Connecticut I am, is like the Oregon of Connecticut in terms of berries. Like we just have berries like coming out of our ears. It's awesome. But maybe I could do pears then. You never know. And I don't know if I have fire blight. Maybe if I don't have fire blight and I have pears, maybe I can grow them. In which case, Nastasi and I'll have to break back into the Brogdale, steal some seeds. I'm not going to steal seeds and bring them. What am I? I'm not going to be that guy that throws like an entire agricultural industry into disarray by smuggling seeds in. But if you're that guy, send me the seeds. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to do
it.
I'm not going to do it. But if you do it, you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like we here at Cooking Issues are firmly against ruining agriculture for everybody. You know, we're totally against cane toad introduction into Australia, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody likes
zebra
that.
Mussels.
What? Super mussels?
Zebra mussels.
What about, do you know that like the U.S. crayfish are so strong that we've wiped out all the European crayfish?
Wow.
Yeah. That's America for
red,
you.
Red, white, and blue.
Yeah, love it, right? Love it or leave it. America, love it, leave it, and even if you leave it, we'll bring it to you.
Five-minute warning.
Oh, all right, so listen. Let me see if there's anything that – did Tozy ever get back to us?
She did.
Okay, we had a question in – we'll get this because you're cooking the cake right now. Let me see. From – I got to get down to who the question was. From Jeremy Brainerd wrote in asking Christina Tozzi about a recipe. And it says, thanks for the excellent show and Endless Hours of Entertainment. I'm working my way through the archive and about 15 episodes to go, and I haven't heard anything about this. I am making a cake for my mother-in-law's birthday this Saturday, and I'm using Christina Tozzi's chocolate malt cake recipe. Everything seems fairly straightforward, but I have a question about the temperature of the fudge coating. The recipe states that the fudge should be warm, in quotes, when it is poured on the cake, but fails to specify what warm is. I am planning on making the fudge this week and reheating it using a circular calculator. It says calculator, but I assume they meant circulator with an autocorrect. Hate autocorrect. What temperature – and I like it, but whatever. What temperature should I heat the fudge to coat the cake but not make it too runny so it runs off the sides and onto the counter? And he thanks us, but don't thank us because I emailed Christina Tozzi because it's her recipe and asked her, and Nastasia will be playing the part of Christina. Please read.
She said, hi, Dave. Fudge should be just warm to the touch and viscous, not super warm to the touch and not hot steaming, which would leave the fudge in a more watery, much more fluid state. This will render the fudge thick enough to spread itself evenly across the layers without being so loose that it seeps into layers where it doesn't belong. If coating the cake in full with fudge rather than leaving naked, make sure the cake is very cold / frozen, 0 to 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Without being TMI, crumb coating the cake first is ideal. If the listener has no idea what this means, I'd say STET. If coating the cake, fudge sauce should be warm to the touch or a much looser fluid state. Because the cake is frozen, it will lock a thin layer of fudge around the cake without melting the cake or having a fudge coating that is too thick, not even. Hope this helps.
All right, so I'm going to guess like 110, something like that. That's warm to the touch, right? Fahrenheit?
Sure.
110? I try 110. I don't know. I have no
Sounds
idea.
Sounds just like Christina.
Yeah? Yeah. Yeah. But yeah,
I was
yeah,
so fooled
yeah,
for a second.
Yeah, Nastasia reads with the same passion that Christina brings to her craft. No. All right. So we're running out of time, so I have some questions I didn't get to. I'll get to them next time. We have clarification questions. We have some more ISI questions. Chili questions. And questions from Alan in the UK on apples, which I'll get to because I really love the apples. And I've been juicing apples myself recently. Just did 6 gallons of cider over the weekend. And we'll get to those questions next week when we're back on Cooking Issues.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.